From pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. A great nation, despite the fact that there has been a great shift in public opinion in the direction of legalized marijuana. According to Gallup, now a majority of Republicans, yes, that's right, Republicans believe in legalizing marijuana. An overwhelming majority of Democrats and a prohibitive, overwhelming, staggering majority of Democrats, which is why Joe Biden actually shows maybe even a little bit of a twinge of courage by resisting this tidal wave. Across the country, 2 in 3 Americans, according to a brand new Gallup, now support legalizing marijuana. We will be talking about that. In fact, let me, I think he's on the line now. We have Alex Berenson, who's been on this show before, who's the author of Tell Your Children, which is a must-read book for anyone who wants to think seriously about the issue, which puts together all of the real science on the issue of marijuana. Alex, thanks for joining us.
Michael, thanks so much for having me.
Have you heard the comments by Vice President Biden yet?
Yes, I have. I will tell you, I think, I he's the only Democrat who's speaking honestly about this. And I think ultimately he may be rewarded for his courage.
I certainly hope so, because again, let's play what Biden had to say. And this is not exactly rousing or passionate, but it's at least thoughtful and reality based. This is Joe Biden at a town hall event he was doing in Nevada. Listen.
Look, I think states should be able to make a judgment to legalize marijuana. I agree with, I think that's okay. But let me tell you, the truth of the matter is there's not nearly been enough evidence that has been acquired as to whether or not it is a gateway drug. It's a debate, and I want a lot more before I legalize it nationally. I want to make sure we know a lot more about the science behind it. That's why I want to move it from a Schedule I drug to a Schedule III, so you can in fact do this. I support use of medical marijuana.
Okay, that's Joe Biden. He goes on, however, And you can see all the people in the audience, the younger people, saying, okay, boomer, right? Even though he's, I guess,
Is he even a boomer?
I think technically at age 76, he's not. He's a, I might be silent generation still. But in any event, then he goes on, he continues this way.
But here's the deal. Ladies and gentlemen, anybody who's been convicted, it should not be a crime. It should be, to the extent that it exists and anyone ever been convicted of the use of marijuana and put in jail, they should be immediately released. Their record should immediately be expunged. Immediately. It is not irrational to do more scientific investigation to determine, which we have not done significantly enough, whether or not there are any things that relate to whether it's a gateway drug or not. I don't know enough to know whether it is, although I've done a great deal of work on the drug side of issues of this issue. So it should not be a crime. It should be a civil penalty to the extent that it exists in states that don't choose to legalize. And nationally, I'm not prepared to push for the legalization. Medical marijuana, yes, but the legalization of marijuana for recreational use, in fact, is one that I need more data to make that judgment. But no one should go to jail for it, period.
There's a lot to unpack there, but Alex, you ready to do some of the unpacking?
Sure. I mean, it's astonishing that this would be considered anything but an extremely liberal position, which is what it is. So where to begin?
Let me ask you this. First of all, isn't he wrong that there are thousands and thousands of people who are rotting away in jail for using marijuana?
Yes. It will not take long to end. To free the prisons of everybody who's in prison for cannabis possession or use, because there's essentially nobody in prison for cannabis possession or use. There are a few thousand, I mean a few thousand people in total in prison for cannabis trafficking, okay, and large-scale dealing. The most recent number I saw on this is Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania, I think, has 80,000 inmates. Don't hold me to that number, but they have 50,000 prison inmates. The state has, you know, more than 10 million people. I believe they have 75 to 80 people in prison for all cannabis crimes.
Okay. And that includes mostly selling.
It's not selling. It's trafficking. It's people who are caught with 500 plants or 100 pounds of cannabis in their cars. I mean, we're talking about, you don't go to jail for cannabis unless for the most part, I don't want to say there's never an exception, unless you are caught with pounds, if not tons. And when I say tons, I'm not exaggerating, of cannabis.
So that's one thing. The other thing that I would question that Vice President Biden said, and again, at least he's not jumping on the bandwagon like all the other Democrats, but he also said that we don't know enough to know whether it's a gateway drug. I guess he hasn't read your book.
No, it's of course, and as I say and tell you, of course it's a gateway drug. There's literally, once again, generations of evidence on this. Now, we can argue about why it's a gateway drug, and, you know, you can even make the case, okay, it's a gateway drug because people who buy cannabis are buying it on the street, and they're buying it from a dealer who's got heroin, and that person is also going to eventually offer, you know, the user some other drug. Okay, that might even be true some of the time. But another reason it's likely a gateway drug is that pharmacologically it gets you high. It primes the brain for the release of dopamine that other drugs also release. So it's probably both culturally and pharmacologically a gateway drug. But the idea that cannabis use doesn't later lead to other drug use is not true. We know it's a gateway. We just don't know exactly why. But here's another thing that, and this to me in the book, I only talk about the gateway issue a little bit in Tell Your Children. And the reason is marijuana, I don't like to call it marijuana. I like to call it cannabis because it's a serious drug and it should be taken seriously. Cannabis is dangerous, especially in its high potency, the way it's now used, where people are sometimes smoking essentially pure or near pure THC extract, or they're smoking flower cannabis that's 20 or 25% THC, which I will remind your listeners is much, much stronger than cannabis used to be. Cannabis is dangerous all by itself. We don't need to argue whether its use should be discouraged because it's a gateway drug. Its use should be discouraged because it's psychiatrically harmful. It causes anxiety and depression and psychosis in a significant fraction of the people who use it. And to pretend that's not true is just a lie.
And it's to ignore a tremendous amount of study and research, authenticated and peer-reviewed studies in all the leading medical journals literally in the world. Because this is one of the things that I think is very useful with your book, Tell Your Children, which we'll post up at our website at michaelmedved.com. And honestly, I would have thought that your book, which was very successful, was a big bestseller, but that it would make more of a dent than it has. I'm reading these numbers about the constant upsurge in support for legalized marijuana, and this is the new Gallup poll, and they asked people, "Do you support legalization of marijuana?" This was in 2018, so it's not quite new. But it's 75% of Democrats, 73% of independents, and believe it or not, 58% of Republicans.
So let me throw a couple of things out at you about this, because the numbers are striking. First of all, there's actually a recent poll, and the numbers have been in the sort of mid-60s. For the first time post-vaping, there's a poll, and I want to say it was from Pew, where the number dipped a tiny bit. It was at 62. Now, 62 versus 65, 66, not a big difference. But it is the first time that I've seen in the last couple of years that support has come down at all. The second thing I'll say about this is that most Americans don't use cannabis. If you look at the studies, and we have very good data on this, there's big federal studies done on this, about 16 or 17% of Americans used in 2018. I'm talking about adults, all adults. 65% of Americans drank alcohol, adults. So most Americans don't use this drug, and they're sort of depending on the media to tell them, hey, is this safe for me, or, you know, safe for my kids, safe for my family? And then they're depending on the media to tell them, hey, what's happened in the legalized states? Have driving deaths gone up? Has violence gone up? Have psychiatric admissions gone up? Has young adult use gone up? And they're not getting honest answers from the media. And I don't know why that is.
Okay, let's address those studies for a moment. First of all, we were told here in Washington State, and I've lived in Washington State for 23 years, so I was very much here for that entire fight. Yeah. One of the promises of the pro-cannabis side was that crime would go down and actually alcohol consumption would go down, heroin would go down. I know about the heroin because we have a major homeless problem, which is actually largely a heroin problem here in Seattle.
You were told opioid use would go down. You were told the cops would be able to focus on serious violent crime and they wouldn't have to focus on people smoking joints in parks. You were told that driving deaths might actually go down because people who had been drinking and driving might instead use cannabis and drive, and we know that's safer. None of those things have been true. Do you know that driving deaths in Washington State since recreational dispensaries opened are up almost 40%? It's the equivalent of a jet crashing every year in Washington State.
I did not know. I knew it was up. 40%, really? Since legalization?
Since dispensaries started in 2014. Yep, you can look it up. And there's actually a paper done by the Washington State DOT. It's online. Guess what? You haven't heard about it. But they found that the number of people who had cannabis, a THC, in their blood at a measurable level had tripled from about 30 to 90 having fatal accidents. Yes. So cannabis use is clearly tied to an increase in deaths post-legalization.
Is that the same kind of data available for Colorado?
For Colorado, we don't have, I should say yes. The answer is that driving deaths are up in Colorado by about the same amount. They're up in Oregon by even more. And that is not because driving deaths have gone up nationally by the same amount. Driving deaths are up a little bit nationally. They're up way more in Colorado, Washington, and Oregon. Same thing with murders and aggravated assault in Colorado and Washington and Oregon. They're up significantly. And even if you compare it to what's happened nationally in the last few years, which has not been good, they're up significantly more in those states. And when I say there's not a single public health indicator that you can point to that's a good one post-legalization, it's true. And the fact is, I was a reporter for the New York Times, okay? You would think that my message, even if people didn't necessarily agree with every part of it, they would take it seriously. They would review the book. You know, the New York Times didn't review my book. The Washington Post didn't review my book. I've had a struggle to get my message out, aside from the conservative media. It's very striking to me. And I'm not a conservative, Michael. I'm an independent. I know.
No, this is an extraordinary thing. And again, the concern that people should have for their children is very, very real.
We haven't even talked about the severe mental illness aspect of this. We don't have terrible things to talk about.
One of the things I learned in Tell Your Children is that, again, right now, parents will do anything. They'll spend tens of thousands of dollars and risk going to jail to try to get their kids a little bit higher on their SAT tests, a little bit more qualified to go to elite universities. What's the impact for teenage marijuana use on IQ?
So there is a study, and I don't want to say this is proven, but there is at least one good study showing that cannabis use reduces IQ if it's over if you use it over a period of multiple years. What I will say, and I don't think anybody, I don't even think the industry would disagree, cannabis use is terrible for motivation. Right, there's something called amotivational syndrome. It's a real thing, and we joke about it, right? It's being stoned. It's being the lazy stoner who can't get off his couch and plays video games all the time. I mean, I think even the industry would acknowledge that there are a lot of people who use cannabis who basically don't really function as adults. You know, whether or not they're 25 or 35, they kind of coast through life, and the drug can certainly provoke that. I mean, here's what I'll say. Because, look, if you drink all day, every day, you're going to be aware that you're hurting yourself. You're going to wake up with a hangover. You're going to have a hard time. But people, because cannabis isn't as physically toxic as alcohol, people will use amounts of it that are really, life-destroying, but life-damaging. And they'll pretend that everything is fine. And why as a parent, you would want your kid to go anywhere near a drug like that, I have no idea.
Do you know, what do kids learn about marijuana now in schools in legalized states? Do they?
That's a good question. I don't have a good answer. I mean, I will tell you, my joke about this, and I don't know if I've said it to you, is when I want to go crazy, I don't smoke pot or I don't smoke cannabis. I watch this show on HBO called High Maintenance, which is literally about a guy who bicycles around Brooklyn delivering cannabis, in some cases, to pregnant women, to teenage girls, and how wonderful he is. He's almost this like modern day Jesus figure riding around on his bicycle, giving people cannabis. And he doesn't even have a name because he's supposed to sort of stand for all of us. His name is The Guy. So
wait, what network is this on? This is a show called.
It's on HBO. It's called.
Holy
cow! That's right.
So this is a step beyond Cheech and Chong. This is actually a messianic figure.
He is. He's going to help. He's going to help middle-aged boomers, fix their sex lives, and he's going to help a pregnant woman. If there's one group of people who should not be using cannabis, even more than teenagers, it's pregnant women. There is demonstrable evidence that cannabis use lowers birth weight, and that if you use for much of your pregnancy, you can have children who show extra symptoms of psychosis. When they're 10 years old, they've actually, believe it or not, there's now a study that's long enough that's looked at this. If there's one group of people who shouldn't use, it's pregnant women. Our culture is so messed up in the way it approaches this drug. It is maddening to me.
Other than Biden, have you heard any of our public figures, our politicians, speak responsibly on this issue recently?
Wow, that's a great question. I can't think of anybody... I'm actually in Nebraska right now, and the governor of Nebraska is certainly aware of this, and he was talking about some of the problems.
But
certainly Democrats know. Let me say one last thing, because I know we got to go. I know you're kind of up against it. But, if you look at the Democrats, so Kamala Harris, she was a prosecutor. She sort of turned. She made a 180-degree turn on this. It didn't help her. Cory Booker, probably the most pro-cannabis of the candidates, he's gone nowhere. I think that even on the Democratic side, look, the Democrats clearly want full legalization, but support is kind of a mile wide and an inch deep on this. Aside from heavy cannabis users, people don't really particularly care about this issue. And I think that people on the Democratic side may be surprised that Biden ultimately will not be punished for this in any meaningful way. At least I hope not. But my impression of this is support is a mile wide and an inch deep.
Yeah, except for the cannabis industry. I mean, people talk about big tobacco, which has some influence. A big pot or big cannabis is also, I know it's a big factor in this state. Is it not nationwide?
No, there's two issues, right? One is big cannabis, and there are lobbying groups. And, John Boehner is on track to get $20 million if federal legalization passes.
Yeah, what a disgrace.
What a disgrace, right? An even bigger issue than that is the ideological, it's the left, really. It's the academic left, and it's, the elite media has decided that this is a social justice issue. They don't think it's a public health issue. They don't know what the science says. They're not nearly as smart as they think about it, and they've decided that this is a social justice issue. Now, here's the problem for them, the real problem, and this is something as a former nurse.
Okay, 30 seconds.
30 seconds, I don't like. The problem is the data has been terrible. So they're now in a position where they're lying. They're not just framing the issue differently. They're lying about the data. And that is terrible. And, as long as...
Okay, can get a corrective very easily. I get a new book. Well, it was published earlier this year. But it's called Tell Your Children. It surely is one of the most important books of 2019. Alex Berenson, you are a public servant and a needed voice. We will be right back on The Medved Show. On The Michael Medved Show, The world of football has been riveted by the potential comeback of Colin Kaepernick. And I believe there were 25 teams that were going to actually send representatives to watch his demonstration that he was ready to go at a public workout for the NFL. Here was the statement by Nike's poster boy for athletic excellence. Listen.
I've been ready for 3 years. I've been denied for 3 years. We all know why I came out here, showed it today in front of everybody. We have nothing to hide. So we're waiting for the 32 owners, the 32 teams, Roger Goodell, all of them to stop running. Stop running from the truth. Stop running from the people. We're out here. We're ready to play. We're ready to go anywhere. My agent, Jeff Nally, is ready to talk to any team. I interview with any team at any time. I've been ready. I'm staying ready. And I'll continue to be ready. And to all the people that came out here today to support, I appreciate y'all. I love y'all. To the people that aren't here, I'm thinking of you. I appreciate you supporting from where you are. We'll continue to give you updates as we hear. We'll be waiting to hear from Roger Goodell, the NFL, the 32 teams. We'll let you know if we hear from them. Ball's in their court. We're ready to go.
Okay. And then it turned out that he wasn't going to do the workout as had been planned because it didn't meet his conditions. And Stephen A. Smith, of ESPN, actually ripped into Colin Kaepernick on his show for just not showing up to the workout that had been scheduled and that people were actually going to be attending. Listen.
Here's my bottom line point. At 2:30, 1/2 hour before your workout was scheduled, was when the league and the team officials were informed that you would not be appearing. And that you had moved a workout 51 miles away near the airport in Riverdale, Georgia, okay, at a high school. Well, guess what? You go to the high school. First of all, it's a public high school. And anybody that knows anything about a public high school, you can't just show up on the field with an organized workout. You got to get, whether it's the superintendent or the school or whomever, you got to get permission for that to happen, which means that were planned. Why was the NFL finding out about that a half hour before your workout was scheduled? Then you show up there. There's a whole bunch of people in Kaepernick jerseys, you know, wearing, you know, I'm with Cap. Or those that didn't have on those jerseys were wearing shirts that said, you know my right. So clearly that was organized. You got security there. You got videographers there. You got all of these. You got all of this stuff there. It was planned. Well, if it was planned and you knew what you were going to do, why did they find out a half hour before your workout? These are all questions. I don't know the answer, but these are all questions. At the end of the day, you had an opportunity to show up for a workout. And oh, by the way, you showed up in a Kunta Kinte shirt. That's what you did for owners that you want to play for. Now, whether you like it or not, the bottom line is they're owners in a league with the ability to employ you. When you want a job, these are not things that you do.
Okay. Good for Stephen A. Smith. His Kunta Kinte shirt, which was black, of course, also had on it the that black liberation flag, which is green, black and red, and his as somebody who once sported a Jufro of my own some years ago, I'm probably not right to comment. But when you look at the photos of Colin Kaepernick, the hair, it's over a foot long. I mean, we are talking about 12 inches long in every direction from his head. It's a halo. It's not hair. And given the fact that, look, aside from his football abilities, which no one really has been in a position to judge because it's been a while since he's played, aside from that, the idea that you're auditioning for and trying to assemble a new career that's going to pay you literally millions and millions of dollars, and you won't address the basic problem, which is that you're a head case.
We're ready to go.
Uh-huh. you're basically that you're unpredictable, that you're unmanageable, that you won't work with management, that you won't work to connect with the public. And we've kind of this year with the NFL, has there been a lot of kneeling going on, Jeremy? I'm almost none. You know what? I hate to say it, but this is one of those victories President Trump could absolutely claim. And the whole idea was hateful and it was stupid and it was divisive and it was pointless. And now this Colin Kaepernick, I mean, again, for football fans, anybody here, you just can't wait for Colin Kaepernick to come to your favorite team. You know, I think it'd be great if he went back to the 49ers. I like that idea. He should go back to the 49ers because that's the main competition for our Seattle Seahawks. Speaking of main competition, somebody who is not directly in the presidential competition but has been in the past, his name Barack Obama, who just gave some remarkably sane comments that other Democrats really ought to hear about staying away from the far left and about understanding that you're not going to win the presidency, you're not going to win the Senate if you don't move more to the center. So there's a response to that from Cory Booker that shows that he's not entirely unsympathetic. Cory Booker struggling and struggling like crazy to stay relevant at all in the midst of some bad polling numbers, but he'll be there at the debate on Wednesday night. Here is Senator Booker.
Let's stop tearing each other down. Let's stop drawing artificial lines. I'm tired in this election of hearing some people say, well, if this person gets elected, I can't support them. And then other people say, if this person gets elected, I can't support them. Are you kidding me? Donald Trump is the president of the United States of America, and dear God, if he gets another 4 years, in my community, lives depend on it.
Okay, look, my community, I hope he means the American community. Lives always depend on the president. We depended on Barack Obama for 8 years. And I think the idea of Democrats stomping to tear each other down, I don't really see that there is that much of that going on right now. What I do see is that on issues where Joe Biden, who continues to be the front runner in most national polls, and yes, according to a new Iowa poll from CNN, he's running 9 points behind Pete Buttigieg, who is the new front runner in Iowa. But Joe Biden right now speaks some sense about marijuana. And then, you know who tweets right back at him? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Now, what do you think she would have to say? Some balanced statement? Basically, what she says is the following. Marijuana should be legalized and drug consumption should be decriminalized. These are matters of public health. Really? And drug consumption should be decriminalized. That includes methamphetamines, heroin, crack. Good luck with the left wing of the Democratic Party. More on that and left-wing extremism coming up on the Medved Show.
So here's the deal.
Michael Medved.
I'm like, I've got so much going on in my mind.
The Michael Medved Show. 1-800-955-1776. The Michael Medved Show.
And just when you think there might be just a little glimmer of sanity making itself felt within the Democratic primary field, when Joe Biden at least expresses some hesitation about immediate legalization of marijuana, There's Kamala Harris, who has been the biggest disappointment. I mean, for a lot of people who predicted she would actually be winning the nomination, there are now calls in California for her to drop out of the race. Because if she's a senator from California, former attorney general, so she's been elected to statewide office a couple of times in the Golden State, so she could probably score some delegates because the delegates are all split up. It's proportional. So she's campaigning in Nevada, and she got made the kind of statement you would think and got the kind of response you would expect. Here is Senator Kamala Harris.
We need sentencing reform. We need to legalize marijuana. We need to, and I will tell you on the legalization of marijuana piece, I'm really clear about this. It has been such a big part, the criminalization of marijuana has been such a big part of what has fueled America's system of mass incarceration. And it's got to end. And so here in Nevada, you know that you've passed a law in California. We did the same thing. But we need to have on a federal level, decriminalize and legalize marijuana. And then my agenda on that doesn't end there. Because I'm also clear that there are thousands of, in particular young men, but young women also, who have been designated felons for life. And now because our states have legalized it, it is one of the biggest cash cows as a new industry. People are making so much money off of this. For doing what? Selling weed.
And that's what we need more.
Meanwhile, these young men and women were doing the same thing and have been designated felons for life. So part of my agenda is what we need to do in terms of dealing with their convictions and expungement and all of that, but also about saying through federal policy that they also need to be first in line for the jobs and the tracks that are about running those businesses.
Okay, this is outrageous. This is basically saying that people should be rewarded for having violated our marijuana laws. I mean, really. And again, you could hear there was not the kind of, I think, wild applause that she would have expected. I believe Nevada is one of those states where they recently passed legalization. But honestly, this is one of those things where it has a real world impact. And the proliferation of drugs generally, the relationship between drug addiction, which is 100% without any question related to marijuana use, because that usually is where people start. The relationship between drug addiction and homelessness is unmistakable. This is an outrageous thing from Kamala Harris. And by the way, she used to be a prosecutor. She knows very well there aren't people rotting away in prison, that nothing has contributed more to people being in prison than marijuana arrests. Usually what happens when someone pleads guilty to a trafficking charge or any kind of marijuana charge, they have more serious charges against them. They often do that in the kind of plea bargains that that people look for to reduce sentences. There's also the dishonesty about this whole idea that we have a lot of people in prison because of marijuana laws. Goes back to something that is just so wrong, so entirely wrong, and so wrong-headed. I can't believe they published this letter in one of America's national newspapers, USA Today. And USA Today, which is published by Gannett, just made a big new deal with Scripps, and it's going to be a... So apparently this is one company that's going to be continuing to do journalism, if you can call this journalism. They ran a letter from a guy named Paul, I won't give his last name, in Deming, New Mexico. And he was writing about the DACA program and the Supreme Court decision, which looks like it's going to say, look, President Trump had a right to end DACA, just as President Obama had a right to start it. In other words, if a president can start a program just by himself without Congress, then another president can end that program by executive order. So here is what Paul writes from Deming, New Mexico. The Supreme Court needs to end former President Barack Obama's unconstitutional deferred action for childhood arrivals program. Well, it was never before the Supreme Court for that. The question was, would Trump be allowed to end it? And Trump himself did not want to end it and wipe it out. He said, look, I'm going to give you 6 months to get a fix in Congress. Trump has said repeatedly he does not want to deport these 700,000 people. But listen to what Paul in New Mexico says. He says, these so-called dreamers came in as young children when their parents illegally crossed the border. That was many years ago. These same children who are now adults are still here illegally. Don't their dreams include becoming U.S. citizens? In return for reaping all the benefits America has to offer, the least they can do is swear loyalty to it. Now, why is that outrageous? Talk to the dreamers, to any of them. They all want to become citizens. They're not permitted to. That was exactly what the DACA program just prevents them from being deported. It takes a congressional vote, and for God's sake, they should go ahead and vote it and take care of it and do this. Give them the right to become naturalized citizens. And then those who do stay, and those who choose not to become naturalized citizens can leave. I mean, for goodness sake, it's just so simple. And the demagoguery on all sides of this issue are just sickening. The Obama administration's DACA program, he writes, allowed more than 600,000 dreamers to remain in this country illegally. Well, no, what the DACA program did was it prioritized our deportations, which is actually a smart thing. In other words, instead of deporting people who have applied for a work permit and gotten it because they have no criminal record, because they have completed high school or gotten a GED, because they speak fluent English, because they are clean and hardworking and they're involved in the country and not dependent on welfare, giving them a work permit, for goodness sake, is very different from saying you are a citizen. But allow those people to work towards citizenship, for goodness sake. The polling on this is unbelievable. The New York Times has a piece, and it says the public's views on immigration have gradually become more liberal overall in recent years, even as President Trump has made his opposition to immigration a central component of his political persona. In the past 2 years, 3/4 of Gallup respondents have said that immigration is generally a good thing, more than ever before recorded. By a double-digit margin, Americans are more likely to say that immigrants help the economy rather than hurt it, Gallup found. DACA enjoys broader consensus than any other proposed immigration policy. Before the case reached the Supreme Court, 84% of Americans said in a March 2018 Harvard University Politico poll that they generally supported DACA. And it's always above 75%. If we can't actually get action from Congress on this, instead of the obsession with impeachment and scandal mongering, then we don't have a Congress that is worthy of this greatest nation on God's green earth.